Welcome to Harmonious Workplaces, a podcast about corporate culture, organizational change management, and workplace behavior. Harmonious Workplaces was started by independent consultants Rich Cruz, Ben Kleinman, and Cheryl Volpe to explore, challenge, and build on various organizational culture and change management concepts. It's a blend of theory and practice based on their personal and professional experiences working with companies of all sizes across various industries. If you own a business, lead a team, want new ideas about the corporate environment, or just want to listen to a group of consultants talking about how to make work more enjoyable, we invite you to sit back, relax, and dive in with us to Harmonious Workplaces. Welcome back to Harmonious Workplaces, and we are going to be talking today about training. And we're coming off of last week's episode where we were talking about how to make change stick, right? And that really came after some tools and techniques over the previous episodes on all the different parts and tools and techniques that we use in all the different parts of change. And so again, we're going to talk about training today. Joining me today are Cheryl Volpe. Hey, Cheryl. And Hi. Ben Kleinman.
Hello.
And I'm Rich Cruz. And away we go. So we training. Go.
So I know last couple of episodes, we've been really, really thick with the tips and practical and the hands-on. And so if we want to bring in a little more theory or a little more of that sort of academic perspective that you guys are far more versed in than I am, let's do it.
Sure.
And if we don't need to, that's cool too. I'm all about the hands-on, but I've been keeping you guys at bay. We've been trying to minimize the theory for a little while. So if we need to let the dam break and just flood us with three-letter acronyms and theories and things like that, let's do.
You're craving the acronyms. I got it.
No, just craving is a bit strong, but I miss a little acronym here, a little acronym there.
Oh, we've got acronyms galore. You know, my students, their eyes roll every time. I teach marketing, and you know, my students, their eyes roll every time a new acronym comes out. you can't get past them. So
I think it's funny. I don't know about when you guys go to clients, and especially when you're starting with a new client that you've never worked with before, and you just get this flood of acronyms and jargon and things like that. And I always sort of play this little game in my head of, can I write an email using only acronyms and jargon that would actually make sense, but that if you put it on a note to a friend or a note to your mom or something like that, it would look like you were absolutely bat poop crazy. But everyone inside the company or inside that function would know exactly what you were talking about.
Right. Like right. The decoder ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if it's
taking us totally off topic, training is important to bring people up to speed so they understand those acronyms. And sure. They can be part of that secret decoder ring society.
Sure.
Sure. And they also serve as mnemonic devices. You know, when you have to really remember something, if it's got a catchy word that the acronym leads to, that is super helpful.
Ooh, mnemonic. That could be like co-enculturation.
Nice. Well,
okay. Tell us about training.
For whatever it's worth, I will say that the writers of the musical Hair, There's a song that's all acronyms, LSD and everything in there, and it's a very memorable song. So there is.
All right.
I guess if you set it to music, you can learn every acronym.
You can do it. There. Yeah.
Yeah. So
works with the states.
That's right. It works with the states. Well, that having been said, training, right? If we look at some of the models, so very first episode, like way, way, way back, we talked about some different models, right? And so ADKAR and the second A, the ability area, we have some discussion.
Just remind, about training. Before you go into the second A, just remind people what ADKAR stands
right.
for.
ADKAR is a model
from ProSci, and let me just make sure I have all of the all of those items: awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. So those are the five elements, not necessarily stages, but the five elements of change with ProSci's ADKAR model, right? We also have talked about Kotter's eight-step model, and one of those eight steps is enable. So enable action by removing barriers. So one of those barriers is lack of knowledge, skills, and abilities, which, ta-da, training helps to bridge that. Lewin's change phase actually has a mention of training in it. So Lewin has a three stage model of unfreeze, change, refreeze, right? So those are the three stages there. And then my mentor, Alan Landers, he has an organizational change model where one of those nine steps that he outlines as organizational learning. The bottom line is that people have to know what the heck they're doing in this new way of doing things, right? Kind of, you know, to make things stick, it's not just training, you know, at the end of this. And it's, you know, we need to share the knowledge that we have, the skills that are needed, and give them the abilities to be able to do the, you know, the work that's expected of them. Does that make sense?
Right. Right. And Cheryl, I think there was also a framework that you were talking about on a prior episode that talked about internal motivation to change and the psychological safety in the space around you to know that it was okay to take risks as you go through a change, to feel safe doing that. And that part of it was you had to have the interest in changing or the motivation to change, but also the ability to do whatever new thing was being asked of you. So that ability part of it comes back in, and that notion of needing to be given the tools to succeed, the ability to have that knowledge intake or transfer or what have you, so that people can get the skills they need, upskilling, reskilling, whatever you want to call it. But that was part of that approach too,
right?
I think.
Right. It's the middle section of the expectancy theory, back to Broom, and it is effort, instrumentality, and valence. And instrumentality in the middle is that skills, which if you don't have the knowledge or the training, that's a very hard step to fulfill, regardless of your degree of motivation. Mm-hmm. But the motivation for that reward at the end does compel one to be more motivated through that instrumentality stage. So the key is to give people the tools they need to do that successfully.
Sure.
Do any of your models, or have you guys ever seen in your practice where when you're doing something that's involving training, that there's an interest, but there's a little bit of an inhibition or a little bit of a reaction from the people you're trying to train that I'm not sure that I can do this, or I'm a little scared to take this step, or I'm a little scared to try out this new system, or I'm a little scared to be under a new boss because I've heard X, Y, or Z about them if it's an organizational change, and you know, I don't know how to work with that person. I mean, there's a little bit of that. I'm interested in the change. I think I want to, but I'm a little scared about taking that first step.
Yeah. So in my experience, especially with anything that's like a technology rollout, right? There's somebody in there who says, I'm not a techie. I'll never be a techie. You can't make me be a techie, you know? And that's a hard nut to crack, because even what you really have to do is show them that you don't, the software today is built so that you don't have to know how to code, don't have to know how to do, you know, anything that's like super technical. It's a lot of filling in boxes and pressing save. You know, that's, you know, there's just a lot of that, you know, type of thing happening. But when they're presented with a new you know, graphical user interface, right? It's jarring. And then they go, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I'm doing. And then I see all these different steps and I get scared about that. And I don't really want to go through all of that. So there's that. The other thing is that I oftentimes get primary stakeholders, CEOs, presidents, the like, who are like, I don't need to know this. My people need to know this, but I don't need to know this. And I think that's also something that there's this leading by example, where if you don't have your major stakeholders bought into that major part of the change, people notice, you know, and it does affect everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is part, it does go back to psychological safety. What is the culture? Will you be admonished if you admit to not being able to keep up with certain aspects? And also, if you bring it up in the beginning and you say, I understand that a lot of you consider yourselves non-technical or challenged by new change, you also don't want to give license to that cover all statement to not doing your best or trying to, right? Sure. So you have to sort of thread that needle and make sure that everyone feels encouraged. And you don't really want to put that out in the front that I understand that you might feel challenged by this, because then that kind of plants a seed as well. So you have to sort of know your audience. And
interesting. Yeah. The framing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I seem to see a lot of is that when companies introduce a change, or when they create training materials and when they provide training, oftentimes they'll have someone who's a subject matter expert from that specific group or function or division who's part of that crafting of the change and part of that crafting of the training materials and part of giving that training. And so what that can sometimes do is alleviate that sense of, oh, I'm not sure if I can do this, or I feel a little bit inhibited in the sense that, oh, it was Bob or Mary that was helping to build this. I sit next to them, or I used to sit next to them in our cubbies next to each other. I got it. If they can do it, I can do it. So sometimes I find that is often used to help soften that scariness factor of anything new.
That makes sense.
And I think that can work well.
Would that be a conscious choice to bring somebody like that into a PIT, a plan and implementation team? Or is that something that just kind of naturally occurs when you see that resistance?
No, usually it's planned. It's conscious ahead of the time. People who, the folks who approach training in a more thoughtful way, a more intentional way, try to make sure that they've done some level of stakeholder analysis. Mm-hmm. And they try to bring in people who are experts in a given area, whether it's to create the right materials for that training so that it's correct, technically correct, or whether it's bringing in someone to help deliver it. So it's presented in a way that makes sense to that group. There's an intentionality, a thoughtfulness about it. And that's usually planned ahead of time. Sometimes, you know, if it's after the fact, sometimes you can enlist those people. I see that a little bit more often when people, I think we talked about this in a previous episode, when we think of them as sort of change agents or culture ambassadors or team leads from a culture change perspective. And usually those are sort of like later on in that whole change process, as you're trying to get it to stick, you have these folks that are sort of tentacled and embedded out throughout. And oftentimes that's often thought of a little bit later in the process. Mm-hmm. Pros and cons, but yeah, for the training stuff, it's usually a little, I find that it works better when it's a little more thought through ahead of time. And that doesn't mean that you have to have all the training nailed right when you start planning your change initiative. Oftentimes that's way too early. But if you have a sense of, we're planning this big change, we know we're going to need training. What do we think that training might need to focus on? What do we think that training might look like? You can start to think about who the right people are, so that when it comes time, you can start bringing them in and have them be kind of along for that journey so they can help craft the training materials in the right way more efficiently. The bolt-on training, I find, is rarely going to work.
By bolt-on, do you mean after the fact?
Yeah, after the fact.
Like when it's Band-Aid. When it's this
Band-Aid training.
An insurgent, yeah, right. This group needs to be embedded with them to help. It's so much better when it's just part of the plan.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Rich, you were talking about a technology example. If you roll out a whole new system, ERP system or, you know, whatever it is, and then you realize, oh, we got to teach people how to use this. By then you're so far behind the eight ball. It just is going to make life so much harder to make that change stick. You've almost undone a huge percentage of the work that you just did to make that change happen, and now to get it to stick, it's almost like you're unwinding the clock, which is painful. And I think people can see that in the way that it's presented, in the way that the change is sort of like, oh, we're going on this change, and then all of a sudden it's like, we're going to pause while we figure out training, and then the training is sort of like really lumpy and unrelated or not exactly custom to what the change itself was. So you lose a lot of that momentum, and people kind of see through that too.
Sure. Yeah. The times when I've seen a technology rollout, like a Salesforce implementation, for instance, not go as planned or frankly, just like nobody does anything with it, right? So Salesforce is actually pretty good themselves at having, they've got their Trailhead, which is self-guided training that they have, right? But you're supposed to start that before anything, really, you know, any kind of implementation happens, because you're creating a whole culture around this software, right? If nobody knows about this culture, and then all of a sudden, because maybe the client says, oh, I just don't want to scare anybody, so I want to wait until after it's already put in. You know, when that type of thing happens and they try to short circuit the system, it's jarring to everybody. Nobody knows what the language is. Nobody knows what all the, you know, what's an object and what's a field and what's an app. And like, you know, right now people are probably staring at me going, what are you talking about? But that's just it. If you went through the training, you'd at least have a little bit of understanding, you know, of what that is. So when I've come in after something's gone wrong and I'm now in charge of having to do this change process, you know, and righting the ship, that's like the first go-to for me is, did everybody go through this training? No. Giddy up. We're going to go into, we're going to start with that first, and then we're going to do some workshopping and make sure that we all understand what's going on. Cause yeah, the kind of bolt on one hour of training, or maybe even, you know, three trainings, to make something like that work. It's just, it's not sufficient. Everybody forgets yet, you know, what they're supposed to do, in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which happens in crisis management, right? We've been talking about the ideal setup where you have the time to plan this out and you have the opportunity to think this through. And I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking, well, I don't have that luxury all the time. You know, I can't really, sometimes change does have to be quicker, you know, and then that's a whole different kind of challenge.
Yeah, sure.
Also, any reason to give a person that resistance to stepping out of their comfort zone for something new, you want to avoid to every extent possible, because it's already that resistance that we've been talking about, why change is hard, right? So
at the same time, when somebody is presented with a challenge that's not insurmountable, right? So this is kind of like growth mindset type of thing, right? And they have a goal. It's still a challenge, but they have a chance of achieving that goal, right? And you're fostering a learning culture where they're safe to learn. They're motivated to do that, right? They're motivated to follow through with learning something new. It's when there's learn this or else, you know, you're going to lose people because their degree of motivation goes down. And even if they do learn something, there's their self-confidence, their self-efficacy is not where it needs to be for them to be successful and you know, making the change stick and keep the knowledge, skills, and abilities handy on the job.
Right. And the degree that succeeds or fails under those circumstances is a part of the culture, as you were just saying. If the culture has had time to develop in the direction of stability and openness and that psychological safety where everyone feels like even in times of abrupt change, there is a safety network here of support and I can launch into something that I'm not comfortable with, knowing that I have a safety net around me. And this is a culture of change, or we are always learning. We are always pushing the boundary of comfort when that is a part of the culture. And that takes a longer time to set, like a jello mold, really.
Training jello. I like it.
Training jello.
Jello. Sometimes it's a little watery.
Yep.
Shall I just ask if you could dive a little deeper into that? You've come to it a couple of times now, this idea of threading the needle between essentially giving people blanket cover to say, I'm too scared to change, or I'm not comfortable changing, or this change is too hard, and having that psychological safety and that culture of sort of that safety beanbag culture. You know, how have you found companies do that really well?
Communication. When you have steady communication, a trustworthy flow of communication where the employees can trust what their leaders are saying, the employees can trust their leaders are getting the information that they need and sharing it with them. That is, I believe, the foundation of all of those potential scenarios where people don't feel safe or do feel insecure. Change does need to happen. And this is just a fact of life in work and out of work, right? We know that change happens. So just knowing that when we are in change mode, I can depend on the communication that I am receiving and asking for. That's what Q&A.
Sure.
And that the company or my leadership or my peers will provide the correct training at the right time in the right way so that I can have the tools I need to do my job in a different way or a new way.
Right. Or just help me get through this. You know, okay. I think you wrote that great article about great leaders are helping the people that are not on a leader level to get to that level. That helping, you know, not being afraid to ask for help, which is related to community. Yeah.
Well, and Ben, you in our show notes here, you had mentioned that there's some different types of training because we're kind of talking about formal training, but there's not necessarily just that, right? Because our audience is not always receptive to like just straight up formal training. Can you talk about some of those other?
Yeah, for sure. And I think in the experiences that I've seen, especially, again, I do a lot of stuff in the healthcare world. And so a lot of training is mandatory, whether it's to be compliant with a regulation or whether it's to be compliant with generally accepted good manufacturing practices or things like that. Similar to what you might see in the financial world, where you have generally accepted accounting principles, things like that, you have to do these things in a certain way. And so people have to train on how to do things and they have to certify or sign off on a dotted line somewhere that they have taken this training, that they are some level of competent in these tasks that have to be done. And that's fairly rigorous. Most companies treat that fairly seriously. Most companies have some kind of HR training or human resources training where there's training about the culture, there's training about anti-harassment, there's training about equal opportunity. There's those kinds of cultural and behavioral norms. And again, they often will require that on a yearly basis, and you'll have to sign off. Similarly, nowadays companies have training on safe use of the internet or safe use of generative AI technologies and how to avoid cyber attacks, cyber threats, phishing attacks, spear phishing, all those kinds of things. And again, that's usually some kind of annual training that you have to sign off on. These are all very formal trainings, and those can be presented through lots of different mechanisms. A lot of times it's a self-guided type of training, Rich, that you were talking about before, where there's some kind of a video or a online course that you go through, and periodic tests answer this question correct, or if you don't, you have to go back and redo that section. Right. At the end, you have to test over a certain percent to get quote unquote certified that you've passed this. So these are all very formal. I've seen also where it is not necessarily required to be that formal, but you have maybe slightly less formal types of training where it's how do you actually do your job? So you've taken the training on how to do a certain SOP to make a widget, but how do you really make that widget? How do you go through the process? Or, okay, I understand that I'm not supposed to harass anyone, or I understand that there's generally acceptable ways to work with colleagues. How do I actually do what I'm hired to do? How do I do marketing, right? Those are things that then typically get trained on playbooks or one-on-one or sort of shadow someone, or, you know, if it's that kind of thing, you would watch someone do it and then you'd do it being observed, and then you'd kind of be on your own. So it's a lot of those more informal types of things. Sure. And then I've also seen it where a lot of times there's some level of formal training for that kind of general stuff. And then there's the sort of how do you do your job informal type training, like I said, playbooks or you know, one-on-one, shadowing someone, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times people rely on the sort of in healthcare, they provider offices, sometimes doctors do these curbside consults, or a lot of times it's hallway conversations, water cooler chats, things like that, where you say, hey, I was just trying to understand when I'm about to do this, do I click the red button and then the blue button, or the blue button and then the red button? And, you know, someone just kind of says, oh yeah, I've been doing this for 40 years, blue button, red button, you'll be fine. And there's just those sort of more casual types of things. Or I got a meeting with my sponsors next week. How do they like to react to stuff? Do they like to see it ahead of time? Do they like to see it in the moment? Do they like time to pause, reflective, you know, that kind of thing. And that's sort of like that little bit of hallway stuff. Sometimes that's coaching. Sometimes it's getting in the direction of formal coaching or formal mentoring. But I think of all of that as some framework of training that you might offer.
Yeah. Yep. And that actually lines up very well with the Kirkpatrick New World model of training, where there is this more formalized training where there's, you know, it's like a self-guided or classroom, right? But like the first phase of it is getting the reaction of your learners, right? Did they enjoy the training? Did they feel like they gained knowledge, right? So you're asking their reaction, right? Then you are doing a knowledge check. So that's that quiz type of thing that you were saying there, where you're actually doing this, you know, test or some other evaluation to make sure that they understand the material. But then there's this reinforcement part, which is it's the on-the-job training, it's the coaching, the one-on-one support, that informal, like you said, like water cooler talk type of stuff, and even rewards, you know, for when they're hitting certain milestones, you know, whether it's a physical reward or you know, some other great job, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then the
social reward, like a badge or certification that you can right. show off to your colleagues, hey, I completed my security training.
Yay. Sure, sure. Those artifacts go a long way in mm-hmm. some cases, right? Some people don't find value in those, but then the fourth part is tying all that to the organizational objectives. In this case, it would be those change objectives, right? Are they performing to this level that we're expecting to perform at after we've instituted this change, right? I see all of those informal, kind of semi-formal and formal type of training methods working together mm-hmm. to bring people from,
They all serve different purposes. And like you say, Richard, it's best when they're woven together in the right way, in a thoughtful way, then they can kind of create this nice sort of supportive training mesh, if you will. And that helps people feel like they can get the right training when they need it. They can ask questions when they need it. So it sort of reinforces, again, when it's done right, it can reinforce that organizational psychological safety valve, if you will.
Good.
You both talked about artifacts and that reward system that could be in the culture that you're working with. And my question for you, Ben, is, you know, I've been in investment banking, which is very serious. And I've been in entertainment where we're brainstorming something or learning how to brainstorm or teaching a group of people how to brainstorm in writing. Opposite end of the spectrum. In healthcare, mm-hmm. is there any gamification of any of the training? Is it permissible in some of the cultures that you're in these days with healthcare, or is it as serious? Where on the spectrum between entertainment and investment banking is the healthcare training these days?
It depends. It's really going to depend. If you are doing something where you need to be proficient at using some sort of life-saving device in a hospital, and whether you're a doctor or a nurse or a security guard or, you know, someone who's just kind of like an admin staff or a management person, if you think about a hospital, you need to know how to use like a AED or some other life-saving device. That training would probably be fairly seriously presented. It might be on more on the formal side, paired with some kind of a like a informal kind of practice sessions periodically type of thing, or security training. You know, what happens if someone comes into the emergency room or into, you know, you're just in your doctor's office getting a checkup and someone comes in super agitated, maybe a threat, maybe not a threat, you don't know, how do you deal with that, right? So hospital staff need to know how to do that. That's often more serious. If it's something like we're rolling out a new process to record our time on timesheets, that's an opportunity to make it a little more fun, do it a little more in a gamification kind of way. Or, you know, we're trying to figure out what kind of speakers we want to train people on how we're developing drugs in a new way based on all the science and all the technology, right? So now there's lots of generative AI tools that are helping companies figure out ways to create molecules that can target diseases in a much more proficient way. Mm-hmm. That kind of training could be a little bit more exciting, a little bit more fun, maybe a little bit more interactive than something that's more formal for a critical pathway life-saving type of thing.
Now, I will say though, so I've been AED CPR certified in the past, right? And the first aid, you know, all of that, and through the Red Cross. Yeah, Red Cross. Mm-hmm. And the online training is a lot. There's a lot of gamification in the sense that it's very graphical, right? And it's situational, and you have like these characters that are going through a certain, you know, crisis, right? And then you have these questions: what should you do? you choose the right answer, and then you literally are like pressing your mouse in time to do CPR.
Wow.
You know, so there,
so
there,
that's
there
cool.
Is some of that. Yeah.
But, so it's but a little then, bit of a mix of yeah. It's a formal, very serious topic, but it's presented in a way that's maybe not quite as serious as you have to read these rules about FINRA or SEC guidance and things like that.
Right, right.
For high
banking. This is not necessarily for healthcare professionals. You know, this is for people who are the lay person, so to speak, who is, you know, becoming certified for, you know, whatever job they have or whatever.
My case
it was a volunteer position with the Scouts, but
that's cool.
But it is reinforced in person, mm-hmm. in a very serious situation with simulation and all of that. But it's interesting because there is this element. I worked for a patient engagement software company years and years ago, and there were some elements of gamification in there too, just to keep the patients engaged, right? Mm-hmm. To keep them part of their own healthcare process. So,
I know a lot of folks who do track their steps on a daily basis or track their workouts fairly seriously, and a lot of times those types of things are a little more gamified. And if you run a certain distance, you get a little trophy or something on your smartwatch, or if you get a certain number of steps in, it does the little explodey balloon type thing. So you get some sort of micro rewards in that sense.
Yep. Yep. For sure. Great.
Just depends. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I think we're ready to kind of wrap up this episode. Couple of takeaways from here. First of all, for training, don't wait to the last minute. Engage early, get buy-in, start that process as early as possible, right? Then consider some different forms of training, right? So know the audience, leverage, you know, the formal, semi-formal, informal type of training. One thing we did not talk about, but it's worth mentioning, is training people who can train people. Because
train the trainer, yeah,
train the trainer, right? Training your leadership to keep the momentum going. There's paper on paper on paper out there, on that.
Which can help identify that person in the pod that is the most knowledgeable, can be that constant support. Is that person in the pit stop desk, basically? Right.
Yeah. That planning and implementation team. Yeah, boy, that was a mouthful for me this morning. Anything else to add for our listeners today?
I think the only thing I would add in terms of the delivery of training is, like you were talking about before, Rich, just to reinforce the point that you can deliver training in a multitude of ways, and whether it's formal or informal or casual, that there's lots of different ways to provide training: self-paced, video, interactive, in person, all these kinds of things. And that just helps training to get across and to stick, and then also to be available so that when people need refreshers, or if they need reminders, or if they just want to check something, that body of knowledge is there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And communication, the open door to communication. Either you've got the expert in your immediate area, or you know where the expert is and you can access them, and you can believe what they're telling you, and you can be unafraid to go into their office and say, you know what, I need some help.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right.
Awesome.
Well, that's a wrap on episode 9. All right. Tune in next time. We're going to have something else to talk about, all things change or organizational development or IO psychology or what have you. So see you all on the next episode of Harmonious Workplaces.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Harmonious Workplaces. You can find Harmonious Workplaces on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other streaming platforms. We'd love any feedback on whatever channel you find us on. Please rate, like, and share our podcast with your network. And remember to add Harmonious Workplaces to your list of favorites to get notified about each new episode. To contact Rich or Cheryl, please visit www.workbalanceconsulting.com. To connect with Ben, find him on LinkedIn or visit at www.harborsidestrategy.com.